experts say the benefits to incorporating nature and the great outdoors in school are endless. With today's educational focus on in-classroom learning and standardized testing, the importance of outdoor education can be overlooked. But that, studies show, would be a mistake. Researchers say students perform better in school when their curriculum includes outdoor education, resulting in increased standardized test scores, improvements in behavior, and academic performance, and a better attitude towards classroom learning altogether. Nature is necessary for a child's well-being. It nurtures their imagination, uplifts the senses, and promotes productivity and problem-solving skills. Outdoor learning helps foster the development of creativity, independence, and confidence. Children can use their natural curiosity to explore their environment instead of being restricted to a regimented classroom structure. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer in for Shireen Siewert this week. Today, we explore outdoor education programs and the reasons those experiences create lifelong memories. More than just a change of pace, these programs have a wide range of proven benefits. Whether you have questions for our guests or memories of your own to share, you can join the conversation at 800-780-9742 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sprouts Garden Preschool is a nature-based program in Monk Botanical Gardens in Wausau that serves children from age 3 to 5. The preschool puts nature and plants at the heart of the program, which is based on high-quality education, high-quality childhood and environmental education practices. Children learn through play and hands-on experience. Monk Botanical Gardens Education and Events Manager Elise Schuler is here today to talk about Sprouts Garden Preschool and how the program expects to lay a foundation of learning with a focus on environmental literacy. Elise, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Located 11 miles southwest of Wausau on the banks of the Wisconsin River, the Wausau School Forest has been housing students since 1942. Here, students learn about nature during a variety of experiences, from day trips to overnight stays throughout the seasons. But more than that, they learn about working together, and sometimes they learn that there's a little more inside themselves than they ever thought possible. Today, the Wausau School District's Environmental Education Coordinator, Chris Nelson, is here to talk about that program and their impact on student learning. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Elise, set us up here. What is the outdoor area like at Sprouts, and describe the classroom?
Sure. So Sprouts Garden Preschool is on the property of Monk Botanical Gardens in Wausau. Our gardens is about 30 acres. The kiddos are, their classroom is a 30-foot diameter yurt on the property. So that's their indoor heated space, especially this time of year.
Did you say yurt?
Yes, it's a yurt.
It's incredible. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yep, the yurt is a lot of fun. It's a very unique space for the kids to have, but they spend as much time outside as possible. So that almost complete 30 acres is theirs to explore and learn on. So that's where they're at every day when they're at school.
That's incredible. Walk us through a typical Sprouts day.
Sure. So our Sprouts classes right now are half-day sessions. So they're 3 hours, and they spend the first half hour and the last half hour is just free play. They take advantage of whatever's around. Right now, they're sliding down snow hills a lot. The snowplow piles are their favorite. But they've got access to lots of fun things during that time. And then the little middle section, they get to do lessons that really are based around the seasons and what's going on in the gardens at that time. So right now they're talking about snow and ice and the changes in the weather and the changes in the plants and animals. And they're led by our two wonderful teachers in those lessons in the middle section of their day.
Chris, I understand the Wausau School Forest was actually planted by students back in the 1940s. Tell us about that and how it all came to be and what kinds of habitats did they create?
Yeah, so the Wausau School Forest started in the early 1940s, and it came about to the school district as donated property and tax delinquent lands. And in the early 1940s, through the late 40s and early 50s, over 200,000 pine trees of different species, such as red pine and white pine, were planted on the property. And now, over about 80 years later, we got a pretty neat habitat for the kids to spend time and appreciate and learn in. We have a very big pine forested region on part of our property that was planted by those kids and teachers. And we also have a big, diverse hardwood section, which is another part of our property. So many different habitats for the kids to learn in. We have a stream or the Black Creek that runs through our property. And we got quite a bit of frontage on the Wisconsin River that also lets us explore our water resources when we get that chance also.
Well, what's a typical experience in a day like there?
Well, when the kids arrive, we usually give them a little insight as to what's going to happen with that day, and we get the kids outdoors as much as we possibly can. We have many different classrooms and museums here, but we try to spend our time outdoors if the weather permits. So depending upon the grade level and our curriculum, we try to get the kids interested and excited about the outdoors, get them engaged in lessons. There's myself, and I also have another full-time teacher here that we split the kids up as they get here. So they get two different teachers each day, and we kind of rotate through different lessons and activities and get the kids as much as we can learning about nature.
Well, you just said you want to make sure that they're outside as much as possible. And how do you think your students develop a different attitude about nature and the outdoors when they're spending so much time out there?
That's a good question. Well, we try to set up lessons that catch the kids' attention, get something engaging, such as like when they came out yesterday's group, when they came out, we started with cross-country skiing, get them outdoors and in nature doing something that they're really excited about. And from there, then we expand on what we've been learning about in fifth grade season out here. We've been learning a lot about habitat, our environments around us, adaptations, human influence, and we use the white-tailed deer. So we kind of get something to catch their attention and then expand upon it throughout their stay.
I know a little bit later on we'll talk about Deer Day, and I'm looking forward to that. But sure. Elise, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about environmental literacy. It's really a hot topic in education from what I understand. And the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction has established standards for environmental literacy and sustainability in 2018. What is environmental literacy, and how would you define it?
Environmental literacy is getting kids to understand nature and have knowledge about it, and encouraging them and helping them have the knowledge to make decisions in their daily life, some behavior change, which we're always trying to inspire, that helps nature. They get the knowledge of natural systems, and then they understand their relationship with nature too, that they're not separate from it. So we really try to build that into all of our lessons. Yeah.
Well, with environmental literacy, you have at Sprouts Garden at the preschool a philosophy mm-hmm. behind a preschool. Why start a preschool at Botanical Garden, and what do you want children to come away with? What is the philosophy?
We really want kids to understand their relationship with nature. We want them to come away appreciating and respecting nature and knowing what they can do in their own backyard or out at the gardens, wherever they're at, to be involved with and feel connected with nature. So we just got done with doing a mid-year survey of some of our families, or all of our families enrolled in Sprouts right now. And we got wonderful feedback from kiddos who are encouraging their parents at home to start composting, which is really fun. Or they're practicing the things that they've learned in class at home, and their parents are learning from them. So that's really that environmental literacy in action, taking their knowledge of nature home and sharing it and understanding their relationship with nature. So they're going home and they're picking up litter when they're out with their family, not when they're just with their teachers at the gardens.
That is fascinating. So starting them young as they are entering the school, entering school at the very beginning, and teaching them that relationship between nature and themselves, and caring, mm-hmm. and they're carrying that through to their daily lives. That's incredible. Chris,
yeah.
What about the school forest? What philosophy do you instill there?
Yep, we see kids from pre-K all the way up through adult ages. So we kind of deal with a lot wider range of individuals. So, you know, at the young ages, we're just trying to get them to appreciate the outdoors, getting them involved in the outdoors. And then as they progress, we try to get them engaged in the outdoors and thinking more about the outdoors. And then as they progress from there on over, we're trying to look at giving them some type of action in the outdoors because, you know, we want to educate them, like Elise said, at that young age to teach them lifelong behaviors to enjoy, protect, and preserve our environment. And out here, I believe all the lessons that we incorporate give them the knowledge, skills, attitudes, and commitment to work towards that.
At the beginning, I was talking a little bit about the benefits of outdoor education and what research has shown. Chris, what are you seeing with the students you work with?
Well, I see when they get off the bus, I see a lot of excitement off their faces when they get here, which is always makes our job a lot easier. You know, if they're interested and excited, it makes learning happen. So I see environmental education affect a lot of kids, a wide range of kids. Sometimes kids that aren't always engaged in the classroom seem a little bit more engaged when you get them out in the hands-on learning environment. I really see that change and give more kids opportunities than just what's happening in the school. So I think it's a nice add-on that our district provides kids.
Elise, what about you? What are you seeing with the kiddos at Sprouts?
It's been really fun since we work with Sprouts that are 3 to 5 years old. They're so little and they come in. The change that we've seen in them from the first day of school to now is just immense. You know, they start out the year not being super sure about what they can do, what they're comfortable with outside. And now they're so much more confident and independent. And I think that's something that really kiddos get the chance to try out outside is being adventurous and exploring and taking appropriate risks for their age. And it's been really fun to see those changes.
Well, you mentioned that first day of school. How do you prepare? Mm-hmm. How do you prepare the students and their families before they arrive?
Yeah, so this is our first year. So that's been really fun. We've had some bumps in the road figuring out weather and those kind of things. But back in August, we did a student and family orientation, trying to get families ready for understanding what a day at Sprouts is going to be like, letting them know that their kiddos are going to get muddy, they're going to be running around in the gardens, they are going to be climbing trees, and that's what we want them to do, and trying to communicate the advantages of those things, the upsides of getting a little dirty, maybe walking a log and practicing balance, and maybe taking a tumble off, and that's okay. So yeah, lots of communication with families to let them know what's going on and what to expect.
And Chris, what are some things people might not expect about an outdoor classroom?
Well, that's a good question. We try to incorporate as much as we can. So, I mean, sometimes it's like long hikes in the forest. Sometimes you're thinking, oh, we're going to take a little hike. Well, it ends up being a long hike. Get the kids excited. And then, you know, I always try to look at the kids' reactions. You know, if they're excited about it, we're going to spend a little bit more time on it. I mean, there's always time that we can make for those things that the kids are engaged in. So that's sometimes something surprising. But overall, no, I think their surprise is when they come to our school forest, how much diversity we have here in our habitat and how many options we have for kids, whether it be weather, if we have weather issues, we do have lots of cool indoor learning spaces if need be to incorporate that outdoor learning, such as our museums and our libraries and our science classrooms here too.
Chris Nelson and Elise Schuler are our guests today as we learn more about outdoor youth education programs on Route 51. When we return, we'll hear about the connection between outdoor learning and social skill development. And we'll learn about some specific lessons that children are learning at this environment, in the environment itself. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Again, that's 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Rick Ryer. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer in for Shireen Seward. Elise Schuler and Chris Nelson are continuing our conversation on outdoor education programs for our youth. What would you like to know? Email at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone. That number is 800 780 9742. Elise, parents say when children spend time outdoors, they have better days. They seem happier and more focused. What is it about being outside that really makes this magic happen?
I think being outside really lets kiddos move. They get their energy out. They get to get all of that movement out that they don't get to in a classroom setting most times. I think that really helps. They're not being asked to sit at a desk or walk in a line constantly, which especially kiddos at 3 to 5 years old aren't quite ready to do on a daily basis. So I think that really helps them be able to focus. You got to get some energy out before you can focus on a task.
What do you see, Chris?
Yeah, no, I think about all my best childhood memories, and they all involve the outdoors, which is why I pursued this profession. And I think those kids get outside and they get exploring, they get learning, and it's always like, what's around the next corner? We're on a nature trail. What's around the next corner? What's happening? It's always that intrigue that I think pushes those kids.
Now, in a traditional school setting or preschool, things are really sometimes very structured, as we've been talking about a little bit, structured around specific themes and activities. Elise, how are days structured at Sprouts?
At Sprouts, we always have an idea of how the day is going to go. And sometimes it works out. And sometimes, like Chris said, if kiddos are engaged in something and they want to keep at it, we'll keep at it. So if they're following a deer trail, tracks in the snow through the woods, we're going to do that so that those kids get that curiosity. They get to, you know, see where that deer went, use their imagination. So we always have that idea of starting with some free play, moving into some planned lesson time, a story, a snack, and then ending with some free play. But there's always wiggle room there. We adapt with what the kids need.
Well, it seems what you're telling us is that when in a traditional setting, it seems to be one way where the teacher is just giving you the information and giving the information, not a lot of room to interact or be student-led. This kind of flips that on its ear. Am I seeing that right?
Yep, I think that's got it right. Yeah, if the students are interested in something new, then we try that out. Yep.
Chris, at the K-12 level, how does the outdoor context affect the way students interact with one another?
You know, I think it gives all kids an equal playing field. Being outside and learning things that they're not always seeing. But we try to incorporate what they're learning to what's also happening in the classroom so they can make the connections with the outside world and apply what they've learned indoors in the school setting to what we have here. So, you know, we try to keep that going, but I think it levels the playing field out for a lot of those kids. So I often see kids that struggle in the classroom succeed more than others when they're out here, because that might be their passion and that might be what they really enjoy. And it gets the kids moving.
Expand on that a little bit more, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I've been out here for almost 15 years now, so I've seen tens of thousands of kids come through my facility. And some of the kids that, you know, teachers say, well, this one's going to be a tough one, sometimes those kids start to really shine when they hit something that they get passionate about. So if we try to instill our passion about the outdoors with these kids, and then those other kids around them see that, and it also kind of flips roles, as sometimes happens in the classroom. Now, that's not always true, but at times it is, which is really neat to see.
I know for a lot of people, me included, got their first taste of the outdoors, the love of the outdoors from parents, whether it's on that first fishing trip or that first hunting trip or first hike through the woods. And that the next level of experience comes through the school forest, where as a kid, I remember going there all the time as part of the educational process, spending a day there, spending 3 nights there, whatever it may be. And that just really instilled personally into me that love of nature and having the time to spend in nature and enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely gives some kids an opportunity that may not have had that opportunity also, and open their eyes to what's out there, which is pretty neat.
Elise, multiple studies have shown that social-emotional learning in preschool lays a foundation that helps kids get along and cooperate with others, manage strong feelings, focus attention, and persist at challenging tasks. How does the outdoor environment help foster those skills?
I think it really gives the kids freedom, like we've been talking about, to explore and, you know, follow their own interests. And they're doing it for the first time, maybe as a group, as a small class. And so there's going to be small conflicts that crop up, and they're going to notice each other's feelings. And with our teachers' guidance, sometimes they can figure out how to navigate those things. For example, working with 3 and 4 year olds, we have hard days sometimes where kids don't want to leave their parents. And as they've gotten more comfortable with their classmates, sometimes they start encouraging each other that it's going to be okay. Do you want to come play with me? And so that's really nice. Whereas day one, they wouldn't have done that for each other, but they're recognizing each other's emotions and helping them through hard moments, which is really, really exciting to see.
And in addition to that, the kids actually get to play with dirt. They get to you know, shuffle along in the leaves, throw snowballs, mm-hmm. whatever it may be. And I'm really fascinated by this idea that, you know, when a kid, a young child, a preschooler, catches a frog, holds on to it, lets it go, how does that help them experience science education in a different way than learning from a fact sheet or a coloring page?
Exactly. Seeing pictures of a frog's life cycle on a piece of paper is not the same as catching a tadpole and a froglet and a frog and seeing the change, seeing in person the difference between that tadpole and the frog and how sometimes it might have a tail and all 4 legs. That's crazy. And that is the most exciting moment. So having their hands on that process instead of seeing it on a piece of paper is just life-changing. And then there's so many more opportunities in that moment to teach them how to respectfully and carefully hold that tadpole, that needs to be in water. Or if you're holding that frog, you got to stay close to the ground or hold it carefully so it's not going to jump and hurt itself. So it's not only learning the life cycle and learning about frogs themselves, but then also how to care for the environment.
That's a great picture. Thank you for that. At the botanical garden where the classroom, now I'm going to get back to this yurt. This just really kind of blows my mind in a lot of ways. There's no seating. How does that change the way students interact in the yurt at the preschool? I know Chris talked about at the school forest. How does that all happen in there?
Kiddos at that age, 3 to 5, they want to be on the floor and playing on the floor. So our teachers get on the floor with them. They've got little floor height tables. So if they're eating snack or doing a craft, they're still just at a table on the floor. Like some preschool rooms, we've still got little centers. We've got a reading center and a science center and a creative play center. So some of these really cold days, they're moving around the room and getting creative with what we can do inside, but we're still trying to bring science in and nature in with magnifying glasses and stuffed animals and those kind of things. And the yurt's warm. We've got a pellet stove heat in there, so, you know, we're keeping the kiddos comfortable in there. It's a very cozy, unique room. It's wonderful.
Chris, you've been at the school forest for 15 years, as you said. I would imagine in that 15-year time period, you've had some memories interacting with the students there. Do you have a one or two you'd like to share?
Oh, boy. Lots of different memories. I think some of my most unique memories, and I remember specifically, and I don't remember this child's name, but we do, and you had mentioned our deer day at the school forest, but one thing we do with kids on our deer day is we dissect a white-tailed deer. We take a roadkill deer, think about human bodies, and look at a deer body, and we work from the outside and work our way in. So we learn about fur and fat and muscles and tendons and work our way into the organs. And, you know, some kids are a little apprehensive when it comes to that, unsure on what's that's going to look like. But I think, you know, as like Elise was saying with the frogs, when you see it firsthand, sometimes it can be a little bit more meaningful. And many years ago, we had a child who was pretty apprehensive. And, you know, she stuck with it. It was a young girl. And many, many years later, we got a letter in the mail of this young girl that it kind of changed her outlook on things. She actually ended up pursuing a field in the medical field. due to the interest that deer necropsy brought to her.
Okay.
So she went in thinking that was going to be the most gross, scariest thing she's ever seen, and it changed her whole outlook and her career and life, which that one always sticks out in my head, and I share that story a lot with kids when they're out here when we're doing that necropsy, because I think it's a pretty cool lesson.
It is a great lesson, and in thinking about how what you're doing at the school forest, at the preschool, at Sprouts, really is instilling not only a love of nature, but inspiring them to pursue careers in the fields that they actually became attached to in these experiences. Elise, Sprouts has been up for about a year. I'm sure you have a memory or two you'd like to that you can think of that happened this year.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a day where we decided to kind of go with what the kiddos were interested in. It was a really nice fall day. So we just started in fall of September of 2020. Or 2021, I'm sorry. And so it was a warmer day, and we had just pulled up all of the leftover veggies in the garden. So our vegetable garden was kind of done for the season. We had pulled everything up, but this was a warmer day, and the kiddos were really interested in digging in the dirt. So we had big ideas of what we were going to do that day, but the kids spent time digging holes in the dirt and working together. And one of the last things that was still in the garden was these funny little kale stalks. The deer that worked their way into the garden had come through and eaten all the leaves off, but the kiddos worked together to pull out these kale stalks. And then they decided to replant them, even though we knew that they were not going to keep going. They were not going to make it through winter, especially after being pulled out and replanted. It was great teamwork and great practice for hopefully this spring when we are going to plant things with them. So it was really, that was really fun. That was just such a sweet day, and really just got the kids digging in the dirt, planting plants, really every little bit of what we try to get the kids to do.
That's a great story as well. I'm curious as to know, you know, you have these planned activities at both locations here. Do you put in time where kids can actually have an independent study or to be able to sit back by their own or explore something by themselves? Does that happen at Sprouts?
Yeah, if it's appropriate with the moment, if the kiddos are just having a day where they maybe need some time to be a little quiet and walk with themselves, then we'll do that. We'll go on a walk, try to encourage them to listen to the birds or watch and see if they see any squirrels, you know, give them that opportunity. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And Chris, I know that the school forest in Wausau has an art and crafts area as well. Is there that opportunity for the student just to go off on their own and go down by the river, maybe use that art canvas and create something that they're seeing right in front of them?
Yeah, you know, especially in the younger age levels, we definitely give them some time, especially like during our nature hikes, or we give them exploratory sessions where they're out picking up seeds and pine cones and acorns and collecting them. And then we use them during little science lessons, whether it be with magnifying glasses and microscopes. But they get that exploratory time at those younger age levels. At the older age levels, we usually give them a little more time to apply themselves if we can during some portion of our lessons where they're working together or individually. And it can be indoors or outdoors, depending upon, of course, the weather. But yeah, we do try to give them some of that time, and a lot of kids enjoy that. And we do get a lot of parent chaperones at the younger age levels, and they get that time with their parents too often exploring.
You mentioned earlier, Chris, taking some of the lessons from in school and applying them out in the school forest or the other way around as well. Can you give us another example of how you integrate both the in-school and the forest experience?
Yeah, so like that deer dissection, deer necropsy lesson I just mentioned, you know, a lot of the kids right now in that fifth grade, because that's what we do it with, are learning about skeletal systems, muscles, tendons, and how our body works, so that they just learn that in the classroom. Then they get to come out and see this when we think about deer and we kind of compare the deer to the human, so they can see it firsthand and what it looks like and how it works. So that's one that we do right now during the winter season with the kids that are applying. That would be one quick example.
Okay. Chris Nelson and Elise Schuler are our guests today on Route 51 as we explore outdoor and nature-based programs for students from preschool through high school. When we return, we'll talk about how educators develop programs specific to each grade level and what they hope to inspire in the next generation. We'd like to hear from you as well. You can join by calling 800-780-9742. You could also send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Rick Ryer. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer. Our guests today are Elise Schuler and Chris Nelson, a discussion on outdoor learning for children and its many documented benefits. What would you like to know? You can email ideas@wpr.org or join by phone at 800-780-9742. This past December, WPR reporter Madeline Fox spent a day at the Kickapoo Valley Forest School in Lafarge in the southwest part of the state. It's a charter school that's outside all year long. Here's what she found.
Students and staff start their morning with a song. The key to holding class outside all year in a state where it regularly drops well below freezing is clothing, specifically layers, as demonstrated by 5-year-old Mia Scher.
I have this coat under this coat, and that's...
Mia is one of 29 students in pre-K and kindergarten at the Kickapoo Valley Forest School, a public charter school in the Lafarge School District. She and her classmates are outside pretty much all day, every day.
When some of the children arrived here on day one, I don't think they really, of course, knew what they were getting into. And there were children saying, like, when are we going inside?
That's Janelle Kisa, education director at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve.
And we were able to say, well, we're not. We're going to play outside all day. And now they don't even ask anymore. They just love to be outside.
For the last few years, the Kickapoo Valley Forest School only did a half-day educational program on Fridays. This is its first year of being on a regular school's 5-day regular-length school day schedule. The 5-day school was in the works before COVID-19 hit, but Kisa says the pandemic gave it a little push.
We really had people saying, like, gosh, we want our kids to gather, we want them to have social experiences, but we want them to do it outside where it's safe.
In some ways, outdoor school is a lot like indoor school.
The teachers will often bring learning materials, whether it's math or reading, out into the forest, set up a blanket or a rug, and sit with small groups of children to do instruction.
Jason Rood went into teaching as a second career after he saw few male teachers when his own kids started school. He convinced his teaching program to let him do his hands-on experience at the Kickapoo Valley Forest School, where he's one of the teachers who work with kids on their letters and numbers.
Ooh, this one I think is in your name.
I'm listening to you guys.
E. E, and how does the E sound in your name?
E.
Eh.
School outdoors also has some key differences from more traditional schools. Most days, the kids walk close to 2 miles, hiking through the forest preserve. One week, they gathered walnut hulls and then spent a morning cooking those walnuts down over their fire pit into dye. They brought white T-shirts, and teacher Jimena Puig helped them use an evergreen branch to sprinkle the dye into patterns on their shirt.
If it gets on your snow pants, honey, it will dye your snow pants, too. So.
Puig is one of the teachers who helped shape the Forest School's curriculum last year while they were planning for full-time students. She says the outdoor time is good for the kids to get their energy out and learn through interactive play, but it's also good for the future for everyone.
The love that they start to develop for their environment, which is critical for our survival as human beings, that our children come to love and appreciate and care for the environment around them. That is happening because we're out in it.
The Kickapoo Valley Forest School's default is to be outside all day, except nap time, rain, snow, or sun, unless it's so cold the prolonged outside time would be too dangerous. But traditionally, indoor schools have also had some success adding outdoor time, like the Lacouture Ojibwe School in Hayward. Mary Robinson teaches Ojibwe language to grades 9 through 12, which she says works well outside because it's first and foremost a spoken language that can be spoken anywhere.
Especially for Native students, it's really important for all of us to be connected still to the earth and the environment and the outdoors, and we've lost a lot of that by coming inside.
She started taking her students outside last spring after the school brought students back in person, and continued this fall.
We still will go outside occasionally when it's chilly out. We haven't been doing it as much lately because high school students don't like to wear coats and boots very much.
Even if she can't bring her teenagers out as much as she'd like, Robinson is part of a trend of schools and families that got their kids outside because of COVID-19, but see it lasting past the pandemic. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Chris, there are a number of outdoor-based education charter schools around the state. Do you see this as a possibility for Wausau or other districts in our region?
It is astonishingly different.
Get that opportunity a few years ago about the charter schools. And, you know, there's a lot to it and thinking about where it would go and how it would affect all of our students in our school, because our school district encompasses a lot of students here in Wausau. And we tend to get through our program about 10,000 individuals a year through our program each and every year. So I'm not going to say it's not an option, but it's something we did look at once, but it had its ups and downs with trying to incorporate it with us and keep us flowing well.
Okay. For many years at the Wausau School Forest, high school students have been counselors at the cabins. When elementary school students stayed overnight, is this still done at this point in time? I know we're at the COVID situation now, but I wanted to ask that anyway.
Yeah, no, it's changed the last couple of years with the COVID pandemic going on, but yes, they still do come out. Right now, we do have camp counselors coming out from our high schools that help during our day programming with our fifth graders, and we extended our fifth grade because they weren't staying overnight this year. We extended them into the evening hours, so our high school students come out and help kind of counselor them, kind of be role models for those kids, help out when we're skiing and tobogganing and with many of their different lessons. So it's a great opportunity for those high school kids. But yes, we still get them involved. And when we get back to overnights again after the pandemic, they will still be involved.
What do the counselors get out of the experience?
Well, I think it gives them a sense of leadership role, especially for those that are looking at going on post-high school into those type of professions, whether it be teaching or anything similar that involves leadership roles, especially roles that are involved with kids. And sometimes it gives them an idea, well, there's a lot more to this than what I was thinking once they have a cabin of kids under their helm that sometimes can open their eyes. But, you know, it's a really neat experience for those kids to be that role model for the young ones.
Elise, you talked a little bit about the vegetable garden that's right near the yurt. How did the kids interact with that garden, and how did they have a garden of their own, or do they have a garden of their own there? I understand that there's a story that you want to talk about related to pumpkins too.
Yeah, so alongside the yurt, the kiddos do have a couple of their own raised garden beds that they get to care for when the weather's appropriate, of course. Right now they are under the snow like everything else. But in the fall, they got to take advantage of one of our really big garden patches that was all squash and pumpkins. So when it right before we pulled out the whole garden, all of our Sprouts kiddos got to harvest all of the squash and pumpkins, and we did a lot of practice doing teamwork, carrying those really big pumpkins around, putting them in little wheelbarrows and moving them around, sorting by color and shape and type. And then we took a selection up to the top of our treehouse at the gardens, and the kiddos got to make predictions about which ones would break if we threw them off. So we threw anything from a little delicata squash and the Turk's turban squashes off the side of the treehouse, and the kiddos got to see what they thought would happen, try it out, see what the result was, try it again and again till they all broke. And then in the end, we scooped out those seeds, got to roast them, and then they got to eat the seeds.
Oh, great.
So that was a lot of fun.
I bet. It sounds like it. We have a caller on the line now. Mike from Madison has a question about sustainability. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. I come to you as a former Wausau School District student who was a student for fifth grade and sixth grade out at the school forest, and then also probably was a camp counselor out at the school forest five or six times. So I have great admiration and appreciation for the Wausau School Forest. My question is, given the upcoming very challenging drop-off-the-cliff budget time school districts are going to come through after the Republican legislators did not approve any increase in per pupil funding, what's the long-term plan to sustain the wonderful program in Wausau School District? And I can take my answer up there, but I do appreciate Chris and the work that's happening at the Wausau School Forest. It is an amazing resource for the school district of Wausau. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, well, our budget's put out in advance, and our district does value our school forest and what it offers our students. So they definitely put it at high regard for the unique opportunity that we have here and have a long history of it. So it will keep going as we have here. As a matter of fact, we are looking at going to referendum soon and thinking about trying to get a new education center here to help our growing program, because each year we're getting bigger and bigger. We have a fantastic summer school program that brings more and more kids in, and some of the challenges that I see are when we have weather days where I need to have kids safely indoors. And we have giant numbers here, especially like during summer school. I'll have well over 200 kids at a time on site, and I want to keep them safe. So that's part of what actually might become a little bit bigger and better out here, which is exciting.
Elise, the enrollment at Sprouts, it's open to any preschooler regardless of income. Is that how that works? Or tell us a little bit about the process.
Correct, yes. So we're open to anyone. Our enrollment process is we have a short enrollment application form online that you do. There's a $30 application fee, and then we sort through those as they come in, see where we've got space in our classes, and then I get in touch with families kind of on a rolling basis as those come through. So that's kind of our process right now. We don't have any sort of income requirements or anything like that. We do have a scholarship fund where we try to provide scholarships to families who may need it. So we take scholarship applications too, and based on families' needs and our availability of scholarship funds, we make those decisions as well.
Okay. We talked about the frogs earlier, Elise, and the interaction between the kids and the critters around there. What other types of animals, insects, bugs, whatever it may be, that do they see and interact with on a regular basis?
And how do they react? So many. One of the things that the school incorporates every week is each kiddo chooses a job. So one of the jobs is tree of the week, one is bird of the week. So kiddos try to learn a bird every week. So right now it's going to be a bird that you might see more often, like a chickadee. So we've got bird feeders they can go visit. They learn how to identify pine trees based on the different kinds of needles this time of year. We got feedback recently that one of our students was teaching their parents how to identify pine trees by the needles now. So
that's
that was
impressive.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
And Chris, what about you, especially with the younger kids that you have coming into school for us? What are some of the reactions that they have with the critters that they interact with on a regular basis out there?
No, exactly. Well, in first grade, we focus a lot on insects. So we're out hunting for insects, finding insects, and then exploring with the microscope. So that's a big exciting one for them at the first grade level. And then second grade, we're exploring all about birds. That's one of our big focuses. And we have lots of bird feeders here. And right along the Wisconsin River, we have a ton of waterfowl. We have a lot of bald eagles, and they're constantly here. The kids get to see them with so much property here. We also have a lot of other opportunities as we progress to see the turkeys and the deer and just a ton of different wildlife. And in, you know, even the later levels, like seventh grade, we do a environmental awareness study where we study and explore in our waterways and get to look at what's living in the water, whether it be insects or fish or frogs or turtles. Pretty neat stuff.
I would imagine in both of your cases, at the preschool as well as at the school forest, that this is maybe the first opportunity these students, these kids, have to do what you do out in these outdoor learning environments, cross-country skiing at the school forest, snowshoeing, interacting with trees, teaching their parents how to differentiate between the pine trees. That's incredible at that early level. Tell us more about at least those kinds of activities that you do with the kids to really instill that connection between themselves and the environment that they live in.
Sure. So the kiddos, they get to just interact with every part of nature and hopefully learn little tidbits that help them feel really connected. So they get to, in those raised garden beds, they're going to water it every time they're at class. They're going to weed it. They're going to feel that connection, feel that ownership to those plants that they're growing. They've got their own little compost station, so they get to work on the composting too. So they're really trying to see all parts of the, like, the growing process for plants. Being a botanical garden, we really do focus a lot on plants and that connection to nature. So seeing from seed to seedling to harvest, hopefully, and then all the care that it takes in between. So learning where food come from, learning what might happen. You know, you might get cabbage worms, and that's okay because bugs got to eat too. Yep. You can wash them off and you could still eat it if you want to.
And Chris, what is it like when you get a kid out there that's never been snowshoeing or cross-country skiing or any of that kind of winter activity? What is it like for that student? And what do you see? That do their eyes just kind of bug out and light up and they discovered a new activity?
Yeah, it's to offer those activities are awesome for the kids because not everybody gets a chance to do that. And most of them feel that excitement, get that excitement. We try to instill that excitement about them, not just that, hey, we're going cross-country skiing, but we're cross-country skiing out through the forest, and we can look at tracks as we're skiing and look at the wildlife that might be running across the trails or flying through the trees. But then I'll be honest with you, sometimes the kids find out that it's a lot harder than they thought, and they get partway down the trail, and they're like, well, I really like it out here, but I want to go back because this is really hard. So you do get a little bit of everything when you get out there, but it always makes you laugh.
Oh, that's funny. What's something each of you wishes more people know about outdoor education? Elise, we'll start with you.
I think that it's not just about learning, you know, identifying trees and identifying bugs. It's learning about caring for the environment, what you can do to help the place that you're at, whether it's a park or your own yard or a state forest or the botanical gardens. The relationship that you have with it extends beyond you, and it's a big interconnected web. And so caring for the environment is caring for everyone.
And Chris, what would you like people to know about it, outdoor education?
Yeah, I would exactly agree with what Elise said. And, you know, in my position, trying to incorporate what's going on in the schools, whether it be math or literacy or science or social studies, into our outdoor education lessons to apply it all together. And then, you know, those students are our future. Try just to, like Elise said, instill that appreciation for the outdoors and the fact that they want to take care of it so that it's there for our future and everyone else to use.
As we wrap up, what would you hope the future looks like for our kids in outdoor education, Elise?
I hope that kids think about, you know, all the things that they can do outside are things that relate to everything they can do in school. Like Chris has mentioned, like it's math, it's literacy, it's all of that. You can write about the outdoors, you can do math about the outdoors, and trying to make those connections and apply everything they learn in the classroom to the things that they do outside is really, I think that's great.
And Chris, in about 20 seconds, what's your hope?
Sure. Yeah. I just hope the kids keep having opportunities like we offer, and build an appreciation and love for the outdoors and continue that as a lifelong learner. With today's technology advances, I mean, you can bring those out into the environment if need be, because sometimes that does help capture students' attention.
I'd like to thank our guests today for joining us, Elise Schuler from Monk Botanical Gardens and Chris Nelson from the Wausau School Forest. I'm Rick Ryer, our producers today are Joy Ratchkramer, Shireen Seward, Kate Spranger, and Ezra Wall. Joy is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program as well as our previous programs at WPR.org/Route51. If you have an idea for a future program, you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be back with another fascinating conversation, and we hope you'll join us. Until then, we're headed out of town.